Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am thrilled to invite you to Rachel Uncensored, my podcast where I get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. From personal stories to hot button issues, we cover it all. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so make sure you tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.
Listen, everybody. That's my new intro phrase from Twitter. I forget who came up with that, but you know, it's from Navi. Today we're playing Fire Emblem Awakening, a new 3DS game, and it's coming out in a couple days, so you get a sneak peek at it. And I'm here with Richard George.
Hi.
Ryan Altano. Audrey Drake. And this is Super NVC.
It's like, it gets me
totally
every time.
Took it's that the brat light. Sorry.
Every time.
Brap,
it gets me brap every
light.
Time. I love that.
Ultra more like.
This is one of the coolest intro videos
it's
ever.
It's awesome.
And I hope, I can't remember, so we're playing Fire Emblem here live, quote unquote, actually.
Yeah,
Audrey
actually
recorded
it
earlier.
Footage.
But yeah. it should look really nice.
You guys should know that
don't
this is
that.
Not my file. I would never play on normal casual.
Well, I just don't want to be able to be like, Audrey, move that way.
Yeah.
And then she won't. But hopefully we'll get to see some cool gameplay first. I don't know how much of this intro is on here.
Yeah.
But Fire Emblem is, I believe, the 13th or 14th game in the Fire Emblem series.
There's been a lot of Fire Emblem games.
Which I never knew. Yeah. Only a few of them have come to America.
Yeah, only a few of them have come to America.
Sixth or seventh here, probably.
Is this counting
like
all
that.
The
yeah,
Smash Brothers, too?
Yeah, something like that. No. It's actually a prominent franchise
it's on Nintendo,
in Japan.
Super Nintendo.
They just...
It's very popular.
They do okay over here, but not all of them have come.
Yeah, I'm sure a bunch of people out there have played a Fire Emblem game because there was a popular one on GBA, which
Sacred
is
Stones.
Free now.
If mm-hmm. you, yeah, if you were a 3DS ambassador, you got Sacred Stones for free, and mm-hmm. that game's awesome, so you should
yeah,
play it.
Yeah, and some probably more hardcore people have been following the series on Wii and GameCube, right?
And if you played Shadow Dragon on the DS, then you know all about Marth, who plays a prominent role in this game.
Yeah, and Marth is also a character in Smash Brothers.
Yes.
In
yeah,
Melee, right?
He's in Brawl, too.
He's in yep. Brawl, also. Okay.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. I hadn't played most of a Fire Emblem game before, and I was a little skeptical. Well, I was totally skeptical. I didn't care about this game at all. I started playing it to write about it a bit for the wiki, and I gave a copy to a couple of people to just play, and everybody's loved it.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
it's incredible.
And I think it's just
well, it's
absolutely
the
fantastic.
Thing
it's
about
let's talk
so
about
good.
The review, yeah?
Yeah,
yeah I mean,
absolutely.
I, obviously, my review's on the side. I gave it a 9.6. And,
that's Audrey talking, by the way.
Yeah.
Not Brian.
No, I know it's hard
he
to tell us apart with the braps, but anyway. the amazing thing about this game, and I've been a Fire Emblem fan for a long time, but this is the first game that I've played that is... something that anyone can jump right into. If you're a strategy RPG fan, if you've never touched these games, or if you just... It's
well, you
easy
can jump
into
it because there's tutorials and stuff. But
there's amazing tutorials.
I
you
think
can
right away, though, it is, for me as a new player, it was like a wall of like organization and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But now that I'm on top of it, I learned it thanks to the game.
The great thing is you can... the tutorials are incredible. They're seamless, and you can turn them off if you don't want to listen to them. Mm-hmm. And the customization is really why anyone can get into this game. You can choose to play on casual or classic mode, and that means basically you're playing on classic. If your guy's
this
dead...
This is crucial.
They stay dead. Like, there's no... It's like real life.
Yeah,
they don't come back.
As you, so this is a turn... Let's just start at basics here.
Classic life.
I'm glad
I just
I'm
learned
on this
something. but you can play on casual mode, and that means that your guys, if they do die in battle, they come back right after. So for people who just need to speed through the game, like I did when I was capturing, mm-hmm. or who are just not very good or very
Otherwise, you're going to be resetting your game a lot.
Yeah,
because in this game, you play like you go from battle scene to battle scene, and basically you're moving units and attacking little units. I mean, it's just a management game, right? There's
exactly.
no like
it's
action.
Like a strategy RPG. You've got the grid based map, and
like,
you move your troops.
I guess
around.
It'd be like Final Fantasy Tactics, or like there's a long history of these types of games.
Yeah.
So if you've played any of those games, it's that type of game.
It has a lot of
but your characters die.
Similarities with Advanced Wars, except it just has a lot more statistics and just sort of depth in terms of the game, you know, combat and. Sort of inventory management.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's
from like
intelligence systems,
like
the same people who
same
made
guys,
Advance
yeah.
Wars. And so, yeah, it's got the traditional move your guys around the map. It also has things like weapons. You have to build up weapon proficiency. You have to make sure your weapons are in top shape or they could break in battle. And one
I
cool
hate
thing
that.
Is.
It drives me crazy. Like, my axe.
Gives you something
awesome
to spend
axe.
Your money on. But anyway,
yeah,
you also
true.
Have to. Take care about who you put next to each other on the map, because that informs how their relationships build, and that can affect.
Audrey's obsessed with this.
I
do
love
they,
this
do
game.
They fall in love?
They
can,
do.
Actually.
They do.
Really?
They
yeah,
can
they
fall
do.
In love, get married, and have babies, and you can recruit the babies.
On the battlefield?
Yeah.
Yes.
Dude,
your
babies
you can have
will
an
battle
army
for you.
Battlefield babies?
Battlefield babies.
That's so dangerous.
That's a new franchise.
I'd be like, don't
yeah,
shoot me, I'm delivering
spin-off.
A baby boy.
Yeah.
But and, yeah, it's just really cool. There's
so what do you recommend, casual or classic? For someone like me, for babies first... Fire
just play classic.
Babies, well, honestly, it depends.
It's
if
no,
you
it's
really...
important to keep your characters alive because, like, you need, like, if you're just like in a barrel through the game, like, you don't.
Well, the thing about classic mode is
I
that
think also keep, it's, keep in it's mind a cool that, pressure to have on you. To, like,
keep in mind,
alive.
I can't deal well with emotional loss.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, Brian, the thing about you,
that's
you,
the main.
Yeah. If you want to get the traditional Fire Emblem experience, you should play it on classic because. I mean, it just adds more weight to each character's mm-hmm. death. Like, if someone dies, their part in the story is over. You never get to see what happens to it. And
oh, my God.
Like, it sounds terrifying, but it actually, when you're in battle, like, it makes you really think about how you're positioning everyone. And if someone dies, you get so upset. Because
do you ever, like, hit reset at the last minute just to save someone?
I reset every time that happens. I don't
I
let
literally
people
back
die.
Out to the menu and close
oh, really?
Down.
I never let anyone die in Fire Emblem.
If I have one complaint about the game, it's that there's no easy way to, like, quickly reset.
You have to exit. The game.
You have to
they don't account
exit
for everyone being
menu.
As crazy as we are, but but yeah, I mean that's the classic experience. But honestly, if you're trying to sort of ease yourself into the strategy RPG franchise or even Fire Emblem in general, there's nothing wrong with playing on casual just so you can get into the story and get into the
so
just ease yourself into it, and then you can go back and play. On
let me give you two other tips.
Hardcore.
One is that you can turn off the battle animations, which is a really crucial thing because they take forever. And then it's just little pixel people fighting each other, and it's a lot more like aesthetically cool, I think, and mm-hmm. fun to watch.
Well, another
but
thing is, if you don't want to turn off battle animations because you want to watch them sometimes because they are really cool looking, you can also press a button to just speed through them, or just
hold
press start
a.
to
yeah.
skip them. All
and
together.
That was my other point is that you can press start to skip any cutscene in the game, and like. I am following a little bit, but it's like a little bit like Game of Thronesy, and there's a lot going on. I just started
good.
Skipping
yeah.
everything.
I'm going to stop to make a comment about this cutscene here. It's really cool in this opening scene that it's from the first-person perspective. Because
and this
obviously,
is just the top screen of the 3DS, by the way. It looks great.
Obviously, you create your little avatar for the game, so this is just a cool way to throw you right into the story and feel like you're really there without... them not having anyone to show because they don't have artwork
I mean,
for each avatar.
The presentation and versatility and flexibility of the game is pretty incredible. Mm-hmm. Like you guys are saying, there's so many options that allow you to kind of customize it to however you want. So if you're like Sam and you kind of want to just like, let's get this battle over
exactly.
with. I want to see what the next thing is. Let's mm-hmm. do the next thing. Don't really care about the story. I want to fight.
Exactly.
Like, I want to do the strat.
I mean, you can even skip cutscenes the very first time you see them, which is incredible. Like in old Fire Emblem games, anyone who's played the franchise knows sometimes like when you have to restart to do a battle because someone died,
you're
you
like
have to watch
there.
That thing over again. And it can get
yeah.
frustrating.
And this game looks amazing, by the way.
Well, here's
it's gorgeous. Yeah. The cool thing is, like...
Can you believe this is the top
screen
of the 3DS?
There's such very
no,
visual styles
cool
in this game. Like, you have the sort of anime-inspired cutscenes here. There are also CG scenes where they move around with their little,
There's
a
three
CG
different
models,
ways people are drawn. There's
like
drawn, hand-drawn, sprites,
it
right.
keeps
and then
everything
the CG
really
models.
Fresh, and it just is gorgeous. Obviously, we're looking at it stretched and not in 3D, but this game is beautiful. Later, you'll get to the places where there are like snow and sound effects, and it's just a beautiful game.
The only thing, it's kind of weird, it's just more of like their design detail, but they decided to not really give the characters feet, which
I
is sort of strange. They're all sort of, like on their tiptoes, which is sort of weird, so you just imagine like this fantasy Game of Thrones
it's
ballerina, but like...
Ask me why I didn't take
have
off
you guys
for
seen
the like
the DS version of Final Fantasy 3
no.
looks like that. It's,
not.
The same like art style. It's like some
pegs.
It's like some Japanese art style that you see.
Yeah.
But what's really cool though is that like you know Sam, you like to skip sort of the story stuff and just kind of get into the actual gameplay. But the presentation and the story in this game were actually really, really, really mm-hmm. good. Like
yeah,
it's
for sure.
not something.
The localization is really good.
So localization is amazing. Yeah. They really preserve each character's personality.
Although I was just playing
humor.
A character who like kind of looks like a pedophile, and he was like, "I really like inappropriate touching." That's like one of the lines he says. And it's really creepy. And I was like, "Wow, that, I can't believe
did
that
you say
got
pedophile."
Really, yeah,
that's a weird pronunciation on
people
that word.
Like pedophile too much.
Yeah, I think that's the way to go on that one. Not like I'm an expert on
this. They're obsessed with protecting animals, I think, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's interesting, though, is that I've probably got, I don't know, 20-something characters sort of in my mm-hmm. arsenal. And for the most part, they're all kind of unique. There are a couple overlaps because I've street passed. And when you street pass, characters, new types of sort of battle parties will show up on your map. And you can just fight mm-hmm. them as sort of like a... just improvised
this
battles
is,
in the midst
the
of cool
the story.
The
cool thing is that all the characters are so robust that you get to a point where you're like, oh god, how do I choose my units to go into battle? Because you have to exclude some
and you want people to level
it gets
up.
Hard.
So to segue into that, this is the best Street Pass game that's out.
And it's brilliant.
I think this is the best use of Street mm-hmm. Pass. So when I Street Pass with Audrey, her main character comes into my game and I can talk to that main character just on the map screen. Mm-hmm. And I can either buy that main character to be in my game. So I have like two main level type characters with her level and everything.
Yeah.
Like, that's a huge asset for my team.
Sure.
Or I can fight her and get her for free. Mm-hmm. And so when I fight that, her, she also has a team that I fight. It's like her people.
Yeah,
and it's like
you
these
choose,
copies of my people,
you
essentially.
You choose which of your team members you want to send out
yeah.
to Street Pass.
Yeah.
So you pick your favorite.
It sounds crazy because what if her level is 30 and mine is 10? Well, the good thing is that her characters are controlled by the computer, for one thing. And mm-hmm. I think based on the hard, normal levels that I've set mm-hmm. my game at, and like her characters were really hard when I fought them in the game, but I was able to beat them because they're not run by her
exactly,
and like I know how to like exploit my own character's weaknesses, which she had a lot of,
exactly.
So it was really cool.
But yeah, it's a really, really clever use of Street Pass.
I just want to say, like, if Pokemon does not do this sort of approach, I will flip.
I can't
out.
Imagine
like, this
that
has
they
to
would
be
have
what
used
Pokemon
Street Pass.
How would Pokemon do it?
Same idea. You set a team of like your Pokemon, mm-hmm. your six, and then when I Street Pass with you, maybe I can battle you. You know, I meet you in the world and then mm-hmm. I battle you. I mean, like that would be incredible.
I doubt they would have you get Pokemon that way. But you could get a cool item or something.
Items or something.
Yeah. That's what I was hung up. Because I really like getting her character. Like, I think that's so cool.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
really
amazing
cool.
because every time I turn on the game or I exit a story battle, there's always stuff to do. So not only are there character relationships to manage mm-hmm. and sort of engage in and sort of see what's going on there. And then that's actually based on how you battle and what you're doing during the battle. But then all of a sudden, you know, Sam's crew might show up mm-hmm. or Audrey's crew might show up and they're just, you know, milling around and they're mm-hmm. somewhere and you can fight them. Plus there's roaming enemies on the map that just show up in old towns that
you can buy a reeking box to summon enemies to the field to just have someone to level up on.
Plus shopping, plus DLC.
Yeah. Yeah, like, DLC. I mean, for the first couple of months, they're going to have a new map every week for DLC. The first one's free, and you can get Marth. We're going to have a video of that up today.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. Marth from the original game.
We were just talking about that before the podcast.
Yeah,
so it is the old school.
Is it classic Marth?
It's classic Marth that you get in this DLC. And it's cool because I just captured that. There are lots of other classic Fire Emblem heroes in that battle that mm-hmm. you have to get Marth. Like, there's Ike. There's Erica, Frame's sister from Sacred Stones. It's just...
That's cool.
Really amazing for people who have been following this franchise to see all these characters return.
I think the one thing I would emphasize is, like, so I had played Fire Emblem before, mm-hmm. not aggressively, not all of them, but I had played it before, and I thought it was good, but mm-hmm. I was sort of like, eh, Fire Emblem, okay, mm-hmm. fine. And when it was coming out for 3DS, I was like, okay, cool, whatever.
Yeah.
This is on a much different level. I know it's a strat RPG, and that's not always to some people's taste, mm-hmm. but, like, this... For this franchise ought to be recognized at least as, like, say, maybe what Final Fantasy VII was for the Final Fantasy series. Not in terms of historical game context, because FF7 was sort of a much bigger moment.
Yeah, yeah.
But for this franchise, this is that big of a step this franchise.
If you're ever going to get into strategy RPGs or a Fire Emblem in general, this is the game to do it.
Yeah.
Because it's so fluid, it's so seamless, it's so customizable. The characters are great, the story takes chances. Like, this is the one to do it.
Yeah. You know what's
really
cool?
Monumental for
one thing,
also just incredible for the 3DS itself.
Exactly.
Like, a really good 3DS game.
One thing I noticed about, like, characters specifically, which I think is, it's a progressive idea that... The half at least half the characters are like women warriors, and it's just like so usual.
Really, really
they're
strong,
not like they're sissy girls, which are lame. But then there's like like the Japanese like trope ones. Like all I can do is dance.
Yeah, there's like the healers,
but
and the dancers.
There's
yeah,
like
yeah.
there's like several knights that you have that are just the women. Like yeah. the women on my team are like generally the more aggressive, powerful
I
characters.
Have,
like that's yeah. thank you for breaking
well, I mean,
those stereotypes.
Flavia. She runs that whole area.
Yeah, exactly. There's yeah. just a, there's a side character in the game that's like one of the well, and so there's essentially two main characters, mm-hmm. and if you play one of them as a girl, then you have a girl and a guy there,
yeah,
there too.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah. I don't know. I just thought like, thanks, Japan. You're coming
really
around.
Cool.
And
some
yeah.
of the,
like
my best characters are female. Like,
yeah,
I have
cool.
this really, really.
But the point is
age.
Not that you're best, you know, and not that they're
yeah,
like
that
necessarily
matters,
good characters.
Cool. That
yeah.
good
my point
mix.
Is that like they're not dressed in bikinis. That they're
yeah,
like,
that too.
They're the same warrior class as the men.
They really contribute.
They're just
to the
women, and they don't like fall in love inappropriately and stuff. It's just like it's just.
There's
normal
one...
women acting like warriors. Cool.
I have one. Yeah. I have one pair of characters. They got married, and the female, like the male's going off to battle, and the female's like hell if you think you're going out there, and I'm not going out there.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
That sort of stuff's kind of
cool. Really
cool. It's just cool. Yeah, I don't know. Let's see what else.
The
so,
cool
Brian,
kinda...
have you played this at all yet?
Nope.
Okay.
He's
going to
download it on Sunday.
Dude, yeah, I want to now.
Yeah,
now it looks great.
It's awesome. Out Monday.
It eats
yeah.
time.
It comes out Monday. And like, Rich
I would
and
just
I were
go home and
I'd
play
this.
It for 3 hours.
One of the cool things about the story too is like when it first starts out, you may think it's going to be it's a traditional anime tale or whatever. But as it progresses, the story takes chances. It'll take you by surprise. You
some good stuff.
Not me because I skip everything.
Yeah, but I mean, it's really amazing how much the story can make you feel because
yeah.
you get so attached to the characters that when something happens, it's
yeah.
just remarkable.
And that's not counting the impact that your own choices have. Like
exactly,
you
yeah.
might. You know, a character might die and you'll be like, oh, that sucks. Like,
yeah,
I'm obsessive
yeah.
and I'll restart the game. But if you're not as obsessive as I am, suddenly people will die and you will not have them anymore.
Yeah.
And it's more than just gameplay implications. Like, characters have relationships. Characters
mm-hmm.
can develop
characters have
together.
Relationship with each other. If someone dies, you know the others
that
are going to mourn
not
for them.
There anymore. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
And, like, you can have, like, 30 characters or something and they're all unique.
Yeah,
so that's one thing that's cool about the game, too. Like, it has this collector mentality, like
mm-hmm.
Pokemon. So
yeah,
that's what keeps me
yeah.
playing. And so when I go into, like, a side quest battle, it gives you an option. You can either, like, mow down everybody
mm-hmm.
or you can put one of your characters... only one of them next to like a person on that mm-hmm. map that's called out mm-hmm. and you can recruit that person. But it's hard
yeah.
to get near them and get to them yes. sometimes.
Well, the interesting
sometimes
thing...
it's like an ass-kicking character and it's like, how am I going to get over there without that character killing all my characters?
The interesting thing
it's
is
cool.
you have
that's
to
cool.
keep that character alive to recruit
yeah,
them
you have
too.
To keep
so,
them
like,
you have
you
to be
have
nice
to
them until
you
get you right
next
to them.
You have to make sure that they don't try and attack someone with strike back and then boom, they're dead. You
yeah.
don't ever get to recruit
no,
them.
No, it's a great mechanic. And it means that to build out your stable of warriors, you have to be like really careful about your tactics, and
mm-hmm.
I think that's really cool.
It sounds weird to liken this because we keep talking about classic and casual, and some people might be like, well, what's for me and whatnot.
Yeah,
and like
yeah.
the best way I can compare it to is like chess and checkers.
Mm-hmm.
If you like checkers and you're totally cool with just playing checkers, you can do that.
That's so insulting, Rich.
No, but that's cool. Like, hey, if you want to play checkers, cool. But the game is sort of meant to be played as chess.
I mean,
you know,
that's
much
what
more complicated.
It is.
I'm
like
a mousetrap guy myself.
Shoots and ladders.
Yeah,
ladders.
But I mean, that's the thing, too. Is
that's
that,
a
like,
sexy game.
Is there
shoots
maybe,
and ladders?
Maybe play casual.
There are a
I
lot
so.
Of statistics.
I think it's metaphorical.
All right, then.
There are a lot of statistics in this game, too. You know, just
mm-hmm.
lots of detail. Strength, attack ratings, defense, resistance, all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But you can actually simplify all that to just get a raw score.
Yeah.
To just have a very basic understanding of, oh, is this character really good or not so good in just one number.
Yeah.
And I like that, too.
And that's another thing. The game uses the touchscreen really well. Like,
yeah.
That's something that the DS has been out, the 3DS, for so long that you're sort of like,
I haven't even
touchscreen,
used the touchscreen.
Whatever.
I didn't even know you could use
it's
it.
It's really cool. So you can either have the map displayed on the bottom, and there you can see all
oh,
the...
Oh, I see. But you're touching.
You can see
well,
all
I see
the...
What
no,
you're
no,
saying.
I'll
no,
do that
no,
in a second.
Okay,
so you
more.
Get all the troops that are active and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
But or you can press the full button. You can see... all the characters, you can have it full, you can have it condensed, you can see all of their stats, you can see what weapons they have equipped, and you can see everything that before you just sort of had to guess or remember at. And if you click on something,
yeah, yeah.
like say you click on the Falchion, you see a description of it, you see what it does. So just at the touch of the touchscreen, you can see what
that.
Your items do, what your weapons
even
do.
Better,
learn something new every time I talk about
how
like,
worn down they are.
I was staring at this stat and it was resistance, and I'm you know, and like every RPG slightly, you know, will treat some of these things slightly differently.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the hell is that? Yeah, what does that
like,
number mean?
Speed speed versus movement.
So I click on it, and it tells you exactly what it is, and what it means, and what it does, and what it affects. And I was like, thank you, because you get items that'll be like, raises your luck by two, and you're like, I don't know what that means.
Exactly.
And it will tell you. I mean, luck is actually funny, because they don't really tell you what it means, but everything else they will. it's really well thought
out. It's really handy.
Really intuitive.
Before, you had to just sort of look it up online, or remember it, or find the guide,
Or the instruction manual.
Yeah, but
RIP.
It's just right there, though, which is really neat.
So if you are going to come by the IGN offices for First Friday, which is happening today by total coincidence, but it's a thing where you can come by and see the office and eat pizza with us and ask us questions. If you're going to do that, get Fire Emblem so you can street pass with us.
Exactly. Because
I'd like to
then you can have all of us on your team.
I don't think we've said this unless my brain has just melted, but it is the best game on 3DS since Super Mario 3D Land and second to Super Mario 3D Land.
It's absolutely,
those are radically different.
Pushma, and this is the kind of thing.
Pushma too.
Yeah, like if you own a 3DS, regardless of how you feel about strategy RPGs, you really need to play this game. You need to at least try it because it's
try the demo.
Guys, I'll buy the damn game.
Brian.
Jesus, you had me a half an hour ago.
Every person that
get out of the room
on Twitter. Every person that's played the demo has been like, "I'm buying this."
Yeah,
now.
Yeah. So, cool. Well, it's funny. I've gotten tons of tweets or comments on my IGN wall about people who are like, "You know what?
How much did Nintendo pay you to play?"
Well, that too. But I've never played a Fire Emblem game. It never spoke to me. But I played the demo. I read your review, and now I'm really excited for this. Like, this is
a monumental
step. Let a girl raise you again.
Yeah, I've gotten
that. Well, here's
the
thing. Sure. Like, I'm sure, yeah. It is.
You've really gotten that?
Really. On Operation Raccoon City, they're like, why did they let the girl review a horror game? They get so scared so easily. True story.
You would be surprised at the kind of crap that shows
up terrible.
In her comments.
You know,
wow.
It's amazing.
Stephanie Lee was on Beyond the other day, and one of the comments that had gotten like voted around up and down was like, minute 35. This is why girls aren't funny.
Yeah.
What does that even mean?
Oh, my God.
Who knows?
What kind of person?
Incredible.
I just don't know. I don't know how
this
happens.
I saw when
2013 people.
Audrey wrote her,
I wish I could comment on that guy and say, life entirety, this is why you're alone.
Yeah. Well, it's when Audrey wrote her Virtual Console article, there was just some tremendous, honestly, bullshit on there. And I was like, I couldn't believe it. Like, I went and alerted the mods. I'm like, go kill some people or something.
Especially something like that's so opinion.
It's not an earthquake.
Like the whole floor started shaking.
It's actually the pizza table being moved into position for the
that is perfect. We're gonna walk out of the podcast and get pizza and leave.
Yes. This day's coming together.
That is how this should be always. So we're at about 20 minutes. Any final thoughts on Fire Emblem, and I guess we can move on, right?
I heard it's good.
Read my review, please. Don't just watch the video.
And if you're an ambassador, you got a prequel to play, which is cool.
Yeah.
Although none of the stories are related, right?
No, none of the stories are related, but
that's kinda cool about the series though.
None of the most the stories are related, but if you do play the past ones, play Sacred Stones, especially go back and play Shadow Dragon. You're going to want to play that after you play this.
What is Shadow Dragon?
It's the remake of the first game for DS, the very first game
it's
of
on
the series.
Just regular
That's
DS.
Where Marth came from.
Okay.
But yeah.
All right. And I think that was an old NES game, actually, right?
Yeah, it goes way back.
Yeah. The NES one is funny to look at now. It's crazy they were doing the same stuff on the NES. So, another point of business, something really cool that we have here in the podcast room with us today. The giant Zelda book, Hyrule Historia, has come out here. It's better than the Japanese edition that came out.
It's in English.
You can read it.
It's in English. It's big. Not only
that, but it's a nice hardcover, and it's just there's so much stuff in it.
I mean,
it's really crazy how much stuff
is in
this book.
Yeah, if you want to take a look at it, we did a Nintendo Nation on it where we sort of flip through it and go watch that.
Yeah, the one thing I really like about it is they expanded just the page, just the page size. The Japanese version's a little smaller.
There's a preface by Miyamoto now.
A lot of it's Skyward Sword concept art, but it's really the second half that's just awesome, because the second half is like an old school Zelda mock-up art. Mm-hmm. There's like the hand-drawn, like, this is the plan for the original Zelda dungeon.
There's the timeline,
like, that alone, that sold me on the book.
Me too. And there's not a lot of that stuff in there, but the stuff that's in there
is great.
I wish
it was just that.
You even see, like, I mean, even just looking at the Skyward Sword section, there's just little notes where they're talking about, like, this part of the bird is fur and this part is the feathers.
And when
it comes to Fi, they like detailed, like, this part of her represents this part of the sword and this part is this part, and you're just sitting there going, like, you guys don't need to plan it out that much.
Yeah.
I'll be okay. There's also a whole, I mean, so there's the huge Skyward Sword segment. There's a segment looking at all the past games. There's also this probably about a fourth of it just looking at all of the history of the games, not only establishing the timeline,
which is finally in English and finally understandable.
And there's an edgy little manga at the back, too, which I'm pretty sure is in canon.
So, Audrey, what is the first game in the Zelda series, and what's the last three?
The first one is Skyward Sword. The last three depends on which split you're going by.
So can you explain that split as explained in this book?
Oh, God. So this is what caused a huge controversy when it came out, is that everyone thought there were two splits, right, after Ocarina of Time. It turns out there are three. There's one where, like, the hero is defeated, the hero wins, but he stays, and then he goes back in time.
So basically, right at Ocarina of Time, there's a split. Either Link dies or Link succeeds.
Yeah, read exactly what they're called.
So the hero is defeated, the hero is triumphant.
Exactly.
Okay? So they assume there are just two outcomes, even though when you play the game, you win. So,
yeah.
You know, but anyway, which makes a bunch of games sort of this, how is this real? It makes this false reality.
So this
to me,
is saying that Ganon, like, stomps on Link and the fairy doesn't come out and then a timeline is born?
Well, no, because it's like, if Link's defeated, then the sages come together and defeat Ganon.
They defeat him anyway.
For me, that bothered me because it's like, oh, so I'm meaningless to the story. Yeah. It doesn't matter if I beat
sort
him
of
or not.
That is a little weird.
The story is meaningless to the story. This is ridiculous.
So from there, if Link is defeated, and this does make sense in this capacity, Link to the Past details this imprisoning war and Ganon's trapped in the dark world and all this stuff, or, you know, creates it trapped and then he creates a dark world and everything. So that goes and Link to the Past, and it kind of goes into the Oracle games, the original Zelda, and the Adventure of Link.
And if Link's awakening between that.
If he defeats Ganon in Ocarina of Time, then it splits from there, and you have the child reality where he's still a kid because he goes back again and he's a child.
So do you remember that, Brian? At the end of Ocarina of Time, the final cutscenes is actually that Link is young.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because he meets Zelda again for the first time in the end of Ocarina of Time because he's little. That's the ending they show. But they're also saying he stays old.
Majora's Mask, Twilight Princess, and Four Swords Adventures are all in one timeline.
Right.
That's the worst timeline.
My favorite part is that, like, if you see...
Wait, Majora's Mask?
No, I don't like that game.
Wow. Anyway, don't hate on Brian. He's entitled to his opinion.
But you like Ocarina, though. You like Ocarina.
I love every Zelda game. I'm not wild about that.
Audrey defend your taste in Zelda games, whereas I bash Skyward Sword just a little bit? I never hear the end
evil.
Of it.
No.
Skyward Sword is like sacred cow to these guys. You have to be careful about that one.
Yes, it's like sacred cow. Anyway, my favorite
it's
thing
like
here
smooshy.
Is that, yes, don't mess
she's,
with Smooshy.
She's already over defending me. As
That's
you can
a
see.
Stuffed cow on Audrey's desk for those who are listening.
Everyone knows Smooshy. Okay, anyway, my favorite part about the timelines, there's a little paragraph right before it where they explain that basically it's all bullshit and they reserve the right to change it at any time. So it's like, thanks, guys.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like, this is what we know now, but, you know, facts may come out soon that change these.
Do you remember before we had heard any of this, it was like, there was some quote where it was like, yeah, I have that all on a napkin.
Yeah,
yeah, goes,
I,
yeah I have
that
on
that.
Some piece of paper.
Yeah,
something like that.
Yeah, here's how they
and nobody believed them, but
yeah,
maybe they
true.
Did. I don't know.
Here's how they describe the Hero's Triumphant era, by the way. It's the section of timeline where Link triumphs is further divided into two separate realities. The child era, where Link returns to his original time, and the adult era, where the Hero of Time disappears and Ganondorf is free to return unopposed.
Wow.
Whoopsie. But why does he disappear, and why is Ganon...
I don't know.
Is that the Wind Waker one?
That then goes, Ganon is resurrected, Hyrule is sealed and then flooded, Wind Waker, Phantom Hourglass,
spoiler.
And then Spirit Tracks.
Yeah. I like that timeline.
Yeah.
I really like my Wind Waker timeline.
If I
timeline.
Had to pick one.
Really? Actually, that is the timeline you pick with the DS games?
Newer games, I think so too.
I pick the one where I pick the false
the
reality
games.
Where Link dies because then I get
Link to the Past and Link's Awakening. And
okay,
the original
I'm voting on that one then.
Yeah,
because you could change your mind now.
Those are my three favorite Zeldas right there. Sure.
It's weird because if you listen to the story in A Link to the Past, it says that the sages were the one that sealed up Ganon. Mm-hmm. And so you're like,
afterwards it says, by the way, this is all bullshit on a napkin.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Are you saying that's what it says? In Link to the Past, it says. Ganon was sealed away in the
by the sages.
By
that's
the
why
sages.
They're looking
okay.
for the
he gets
daughters
sealed
of the
into
sages
the sacred realm.
Exactly.
Because I remember when they were explaining when Link to the Past came out, they're like, "Oh, those first two Zelda games take place long after this," which I thought was a cool idea.
It was
to begin.
A prequel. Cool. That was the first time. That
cool. So the NES Zelda, the original, is the last game.
No.
Adventure of Link is after
Link,
that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They established that right away.
Okay.
Because Adventure of Link.
It is the same Link.
Hopefully,
too.
I don't have to say spoilers, but Ganon's dead in Adventure of Link, and they're trying to resurrect Ganon in Adventure of Link. Mm-hmm.
And Link learned how to jump.
Yeah, here's yes. That thing that Audrey referenced. This chronicle merely collects information that is believed to be true at this time, and there are many obscured and unanswered secrets that still lie within the tale. As the stories and storytellers of Hyrule change, so too does its history. Hyrule's history is continuously woven tapestry of events, changes that seem inconsequential, disregarded without a shrug, could evolve at some point to hatch new legends and perhaps change this tapestry of history itself. That's a really fancy way of saying that none of this matters.
To me, like, did you guys ever watch Three Stooges?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you know how on the Three Stooges,
it's so violent. Yeah,
every single episode, they have like a different job and they live in a different place, and they never have to explain why. They're
it's like The Simpsons.
Oh, we're firemen.
Yeah, everything
today.
Resets.
It's like
at
the Simpsons.
End.
Exactly.
For the most part, unless
that's the way I always saw Zelda, where it's like, you know, there's a hero in time and he wears this green thing and he fights monsters and puts the arrow in the guy's eye.
I really started to think about it was with Minish Cap, where it's like, okay, this is clearly the first. Well, it was the first.
They
in the
told.
Series.
They said at the time, like,
before it was called the Hyrule, you know, the Master Sword, all of that.
That was like part of its appeal.
Everyone said I was crazy for saying that was the first. Screw you guys, that was right.
No, they said at the time, it was like, this is the earliest one, because this is how Link got his hat and his costume.
Yeah,
this is the weird thing about
it. Yeah.
This is the weird thing about all this. I agree with Brian. Like, I kind of preferred, for the most part, these existing just in their own little spaces, with maybe a couple of them being related at the time, because some are clearly tied together.
Yeah, well, like Ocarina and Link to the Past.
Yeah.
But I never saw the need to, like, try and string them all together into one coherent thread. I was fine with, like, there are different links, and some of these stories contain
the same
link.
And Four Swords doesn't matter. That's what I was
like, clearly, Wind Waker and Phantom Hourglass take place right after
I will
each other.
That
that makes sense, but... Mm-hmm.
They didn't try to figure out where Link's crossbow training goes in this continuity, and I am just pissed about it.
I know, that's messed up.
And they mention, there's a page in there that mentions, like, weird Zeldas, and, like, it actually mentions, like, Zelda BS, which is the Satella View version Super Nintendo remake of the first Zelda.
Where
which is really
are
cool.
those...
In this story, our hero finds a satellite.
And, like, I thought they were going to go as far as to like mention at least the CDI ones and like put some art in there and mention the cartoon. So I don't know that, like, maybe there's some rights stuff with that, but I wish like in a Zelda book they would at least just be like, these exist, because it's just cool.
Yeah, there should be like an oops page.
I don't care how stupid they are. Yeah, I think they're cool. If they
I really want to know.
I want to see like also old merchandise. I love old Zelda merchandise.
Oh,
yeah.
They have a little bit
of
them there, but
they do
a lot.
Yeah, they do.
There's
one page
of some great stuff in here. I mean, anyway, so Hyrule Story is out. There's two editions. Is one of them soft cover, or is it?
It's coming out after this one sells out. This is limited edition.
Yeah.
Just get this one. Don't bother with that.
Yeah, if you
want
to get the pretty version, jump on it now, because
it was
it's hard to find already.
For US
people, on Amazon
exactly.
For US people, it's on Amazon for super cheap.
It's like $20 on Amazon, which is almost half of the MSRP. So.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's really good. I mean, any Zelda fan should own it. I mean, any Zelda fan should probably own the Japanese version too, but now you can read it.
And just for Nintendo to like open their archives and like show any development of like any type of game has been like a new thing that they're doing more and more with a lot of ass and stuff. And it's always great. And I would just like a book of a lot of ass stuff, you know, like they show off great concept art, but that's what this is like.
That's the funny
thing
is
my favorite games.
Nintendo is so walled off that when they finally let us in there, like, it's just this fascinating, it's like going into seeing how toys are made or something like that, where you're like, wow, this is how this
it is how toys are made.
Exactly. But
and dreams.
I'm just happy it came out, because for a long time, I mean, this book came out over a year ago in Japan, and there was just no sign of it even as late as last summer, and then finally we heard that it was coming. Kudos to Dark Horse for actually bringing it out.
Oh, it's the comic book company?
Dark Horse is great at bringing out things that people don't want to bring out.
They're also putting out Art of BioShock
Infinite. Not saying much about Dark Horse's comic books.
No, they're great. Dark Horse also does all the Star Wars comic books.
Not anymore.
Yeah, true, with Marvel. Who knows? But it's really cool. They're also doing BioShock Infinite, the art book for that. Great for them. And it's actually probably will rank as one of the best-selling books of the year in the comic book industry, because the scale for comic books is so low.
It was number one when it first went on sale, and then the day it came out, it went number one again.
Yeah, so it's huge. Go get it if you haven't. Really good stuff. Anyway,
the score is really nice in this.
The music is gorgeous.
It's great.
It sounds like Lord of the Rings a little bit.
One other thing, you guys aren't hearing it in what's going on here, but all the little characters have little like and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. And you can actually, but this is the thing, you can turn that off, because it was annoying the hell out of me.
Oh, you turned it off?
Yeah.
So that way you don't have
It's funny because Rich was complaining about it, and I was like, dude,
what?
Turn it off.
Yeah, you just turn it off.
They like the little Japanese emotions, too.
Yeah, but if you turn, you can also choose to turn that off and or the voices in the cutscenes, too.
So
you can completely customize how much of those voices you hear, and you can put it in Japanese or English, which is amazing most games.
I have this weird glitch where, like, my cutscenes are in Japanese, but then the little, Chrome and all that stuff is in English, and I don't know
That's also
happened.
Japanese. You just don't know Japanese.
Well, because what's annoying is they'll sometimes be like, really? And the best part is, the best part is when they're like, they'll say one word, but the VO does a different word. So someone will be like, understood, and the VO will be like, agreed.
Roger
like,
that.
Like, wait a minute, which one was it?
Yeah,
it's silly. So. I kind of like it. So news there's time. A couple other little news bits besides what we've talked about so far. And one really cool one that I'd like to point out is that Smash Brothers Melee is going to be an EVO
that's cool.
competition yeah. title this year.
Awesome.
EVO is the world's biggest fighting game competition. Mm-hmm. It's never had anything like Smash Brothers. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, Street Fighter 4, Marvel vs. Capcom. Yeah. This is the type of games that they do. Like, Street Fighter 4.
Guarantee you it'll be no item sim.
Yep.
Yeah,
well,
you.
We don't know yet.
But
they did a fundraiser.
You need to do a fundraiser on items versus no items.
Yeah, and God, and as part of that, a game was decided to add to the roster, and it got settled on Melee, which is the GameCube Smash Brothers, yeah, which is just really cool. That would be fun to watch.
Pros
playing
yeah.
this at EVO is going to be a good thing. So we'll cover that at IGN, by the way.
Yeah, there is a slight disclaimer on that, which is they have to like verify the fundraising or something like that. And it's sort of like it made it. It is number one. It mm-hmm. should be added as the eighth game to EVO. There is still a little more like technical whatever. But
I can't wait
it
to see
basically
that.
Did it.
They're going to have trouble finding enough GameCubes to go.
Yeah. Well, you might put it on a Wii, I guess. Put it on Wii's and then just plug in
memory cards.
Yeah.
It's all complex.
Yeah, it is a little complex.
But you know what? The GameCube has a handle, so everybody can bring it.
That's true.
True.
That'd be embarrassing if they booted it up and they didn't have the four.
I don't know that you'd have trouble finding GameCube.
No, you wouldn't.
GameStop sells
them
for like
$30
bucks, I think. Yeah. You know,
$30.
I think so.
That's your Wind Waker ticket right there.
There you go. Yeah.
Coming out in HD soon, though.
Yeah.
No, I can't wait. I'm just so excited. Yeah. Every time I hear, I forget about that. I remember.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
gonna be great.
Should we
stop forgetting about it.
I will.
What's up?
Moving on, we had a kind of quarterly investor report, which sounds boring, but as part of that, we get a bunch of behind-the-scenes Nintendo news.
Yeah,
and there's some cool stuff in there, like Rich and I were talking about earlier. I think the big points of interest are that there's not going to be a price drop for the Wii U.
Yeah, Iwata is like emphasizing like this is not happening. Our goal is to make sure people understand why Wii U is important, why Wii U has games coming up. This is why they did that thing last week, where they're like, here's all of these games.
Well, and the only reason people would expect a price drop is for a couple of reasons. One is that 3DS got it about now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But 3DS was doing much worse than the Wii U. It's like the Wii U hasn't met their expected sales numbers, but
the 3DS was what, 7 months after?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's been
7 months.
It's been 2 months.
There could always be a reaction to console information Xbox mm-hmm. and
this is
and
the thing is all this is subject to change. I mean, in 5 months, like you said, Nintendo could decide to do it. Obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. So another.
Well, we said for right now.
They're really struggling right now because they have no freaking games coming out.
Yeah.
That's just obviously a problem.
He said something like we need to make it more apparent how good the system is.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things they talked about was struggling just in getting the people to identify the brand. Yeah. I think that they're still struggling there. And people like us, we get it. And we think people are stupid for not understanding that this is the Wii 2, mm-hmm. but they didn't call
it
that.
I would love
so.
To see some numbers for how many kids got a Wii when they asked for a Wii
sure.
on Christmas.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think all it really takes
that's
is
so
just
sad.
They need some really... smart and really ham-fisted marketing to just say, this is what this thing is, it's new, and it has these games, and you can play them now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So another cool thing that came out of that report was that Nintendo has been seeing a lack of third-party support already for the Wii U in America.
Yeah. And 3DS.
And 3DS, yeah. But so what they're going to do to counteract that is help Japanese games get localized. So we win.
Basically,
we're gonna get a bunch of great Japanese games. Like, remember last cycle, we had Xenoblade and stuff like that.
And
like it was all in limbo.
Like,
hopefully,
Project
that means that we'll get more stuff coming here. Yeah,
I mean, this is basically what they're seeing is that Japan, the 3DS in particular, has just dominated, just took off. And they have Monster Hunter and have all these things.
But Apple will crush
over here when you look. Yeah, well, you look at companies like EA and some of these groups, and they're not supporting Wii U, but they're also not supporting the 3DS, so there's not. And so Iwata's solution is basically like, look, if you won't bring your third-party games from Japan over, because we've been seeing like a lot of lag there, don't know about Bravely Default. Cross Zone finally got announced, but for a long time we didn't know about that. And
we don't need
other
a
games.
Game called Bravely Default Flying Fairy. We don't
need
that game.
Honestly, Cut Off the game is amazing. Cut Off Flying Fairy, and you have a perfectly sort of
perfectly
logical,
similarly meaningless name.
Bravely Default. Yeah, the kids are going to run out and buy that one.
Actually, you know what's funny is that the title.
I like Bravely Asphalt.
They directly correspond to the gameplay mechanics, which is weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, the game
they directly correspond to how much it sucks to be a dad in Toys R Us.
Yeah,
not giving them this flying fairy game.
My boy wants a game called Flying Fairy
Default. I'm just gonna get him a football, whatever.
Just gonna get him a Wii.
Actually, you know what's funny is that everyone
Call of Duty on it.
Everyone thought that Bravely Default was coming here when they trademarked all the bravest, but that turned out to be that horrible iOS game. So
yeah. Nintendo should also localize some American games for their Wii U. Like Tomb Raider.
That would be nice. Yeah,
BioShock.
That's a whole other thing, because Madden 25 just got announced and there's no
Wii U. That's another little tidbit. Is that, but so Madden wasn't announced for anything but PS3 and Xbox. And it's called Madden 25, mm-hmm. which is funny.
Yeah, they're getting away
but
from that, the years.
But we know it's going to come to probably the next gens if they're out when Madden comes out. And we know it'll come to PC maybe. I don't know. They just didn't announce it for anything but those two. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason. It's weird. But I wish Wii U would have been at least part of that.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to play Madden on Wii U anyway.
I think sometimes what happens,
because it doesn't sell.
I think Nintendo sometimes likes to pull some of these announcements into their own stuff, and this is not confirmation. Maybe. This is not confirmation of anything, but like just one theory, maybe a glimmer of hope, is that Iwata even mentioned that they want to do a very third party focused Wii U presentation at some point.
I want to see him talk about football in that white background.
Yeah,
yeah, they're going to do a direct for 3DS and for third parties.
I wouldn't be surprised to see that get pulled in there. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Someone like Reggie would probably present that one.
That's really funny.
Yeah. But we'll see. I have no idea, but that could be
like, hello, part white of people.
So, final order of business is a little thing happened yesterday, and we caught us all off guard, and we got a little video in the mail which said that there's something happening on February 20th.
Oh, okay.
I was like, what are you talking about? I was like, what happened?
I know, because it's not Nintendo news necessarily,
but it will impact
Nintendo. That's a big deal. The PS4 is going to probably be announced. That day.
I already suspected this was happening. Yeah, it's
so they're absolute total liars when they said they'd let Xbox go first a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I thought that was very sweet of them.
Yeah.
Did they say that?
Like, thanks, guys. Yeah. Literally really? A couple weeks ago.
What did they say?
That they're going to let Xbox go first.
That's just what they said.
They literally said we're going to let Microsoft make their next-gen announcement first.
Do they know that maybe that's going to happen first?
Unless it's they not. Announce it in the next 2 weeks, I doubt
it's
it.
Not. It could be.
It's
do you think this caused Nintendo or forced Nintendo's hand with that recent thing where they announced all those games?
Nintendo does its own
fiscal
thing.
Report. Yeah.
But they would have known, I bet.
Yeah.
Fiscal report caused the... Yeah.
Fiscal report?
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I think it's...
What I'm referring to, by the way, is that Nintendo announced, you know, all those,
those
games.
This is just going to be yet again another generation where you'll be playing your 360 games and PS3 games on, you know, PS4, 720 or whatever, and then when you want to play Nintendo games, you'll turn on your Wii U.
Yeah. That's just the way it's always been. What it's for. Like, you go to those systems for a certain thing, and you go to your Nintendo system for the Nintendo franchises and for the games that come to those.
And then we had that story with Tomb Raider where they're like, we tried to make it, but we couldn't come up with anything for the controller. It was like, well, then stop designing games because you're...
Be more creative.
Because if you couldn't get over that hurdle, like...
I couldn't figure out how to put the map on the screen. Look, it was weird.
Go back to Full Sail or whatever.
That's sad.
No, seriously, that's pathetic.
Well, here's the honest truth, and, like, honestly...
I could have written the feature, like, oh, 5 things to do with this controller and sent it to them.
I don't even buy their excuse.
Or don't do anything. Just leave the controller.
Or just leave it.
Yeah. I don't buy their excuse. Like, it's a ludicrous excuse. Really, what the excuse is, that people allocate budgets years and years in advance. They develop on certain cycles years and years in advance. And here comes this weird console that Nintendo probably wasn't telling them a whole lot about.
Nope. And they probably didn't have a dev kit or anything.
Yeah, they
like
probably
that
didn't have a lot of information. And are you going to like disrupt your multi-million-dollar development project to try and add in another console that probably won't have a whole lot of people? It's only 3 million worldwide.
Yeah.
You just know, say, "Oops, we forgot." Rather than, "Oh, our team of brilliant game designers had a temporary brain fart."
Don't even say,
"I forgot." Just say it didn't fit within our established development cycle.
But that's happened with other stuff, right? Because I think that there was something about BioShock and Wii U also, right?
That's
where they were just like, "We never planned for it."
Yeah, that's the thing, is like that was going to happen. Nintendo came out early
enough. But it sucks. I mean, it doesn't mean it's not bad.
Absolutely.
It's terrible.
It's not great, and I think that there is a lot of blame that can go at Nintendo for doing this. I mean, had they wanted to make sure, you know.
But they did get Assassin's Creed and Batman.
Spoilers,
like that,
guys, but Tomb Raider has a map when you hit the pause button.
Ah!
There's an idea.
Yeah.
We could plant a little tree there. How about
that? Brian's going to leave us soon for game development.
But if you look at games like Assassin's Creed and even Epic Mickey or you know, all these other Wii U games, they had to go and get an entirely separate team of another dozen, 2 dozen guys to go make this version, to port it over, make sure it's working right. So... it's a lot of money, and you know, if you're you know, it's hard to develop in this gen. And
I'm just saying, like, after launch, we have had so little other third-party announcements that I'm like, now I'm like at the beginning, I was like, man, they got everything. And it's like, wow, now they have nothing. Well, yeah. Like, why is there no third-party?
That just comes down to, I think, who knows? You know, there could be a lot of reasons for this. It comes down to Nintendo not talking to people. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's just really it. They came at a strange time. You know, everyone is gearing up for the next Sony Microsoft stuff at the end of the year, or give or take. And they're finishing up this gen now, and you know, Wii U sort of doesn't fit into those boxes.
It's caught between worlds, basically.
And I say this all the time, but people forget that's how modern launches are. Remember the PS3? True. How many years was it before that had a library? You know, takes time.
But Wii U had a great
library
at launch, though. Then I think it's like kind of different, and just in that, I think the Wii U had a great stable, but now it has to build
now
up. Like it didn't snowball exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
It kind
but
of like the snow fort melted.
I completely agree with you, Audrey. If you look back at some of the comments people were making after the 360 launch, which went on to become the most beloved console of all time.
Yeah.
We were sitting there for 2 months.
I don't want to play Cameo for the next 6 months.
Nobody did.
I thought the 360 and PS3 were worthless for their first year or two of existence. Yeah. I was just like, this is silly. And I was, I forget why, but I was doing some research on the 360 sort of evolution of its operating system and just like a user interface. And it was terrible at
It was awful.
The blades. It's terrible now.
Yeah, it's terrible now.
They had a great,
but when it
great
launched,
thing going.
I mean,
and now
go
it's
back
terrible.
And look at Halo 3. That game looks shitty now. You know what I mean? It takes time for people to learn how to best use the system, how to make the most out of it.
Here's the question is like, will they? Will they take that time? And that's
Nintendo
sort of
will.
Question.
And that's up
Nintendo
each developer.
Will,
Nintendo
sure.
is going to make some great HD games.
And, and I mean, this is another thing that emerged in the financial report, and they briefly mentioned it in the Nintendo Direct, is their thought process is now, you know, not all developers are just flocking to us, so we're going to go to them. We're going to make certain partnerships, find certain things we can collaborate on. That's why, and it sounds weird, but Shin Megami Fire Emblem exists. And they say there are more in the works. So, and I hope not all of them are crossovers. I wouldn't mind seeing like Nintendo and Capcom collaborate on some new IP.
Mm-hmm. I love the new crossover thing. I think it's
I like
so
the
cool.
idea.
Did we talk about that on the last podcast? I can't remember.
Yeah, we talked about a whole bunch of stuff on the last one. But it's also like the Namco team developing Smash Brothers, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Finding other teams to
help. A little worried about that.
That's a clever way to use other talent to, you know, further their own franchise.
Yeah, and I mean,
as much as I want Pac-Man to be in it.
No, please. Anthropomorphic Pac-Man freaks me out.
How about just Blinky?
Okay.
Yeah, that would be okay.
What about if it's all four ghosts and it's like they're just like kind of like
you play like
a big
ice
cloud,
climber,
a
ghost
cloud.
Or something. Yeah, yeah. Amazing.
So yeah, I mean that's I like that idea. You know, they also sort of alluded in the financial report that they're going to be showing some stuff at GDC or talking about more developer opportunities at GDC. We know that they're becoming more flexible with the eShop. They're almost like Steam now. They licensed Unity, which is this very versatile, powerful engine that a lot of indie developers use. So. In a weird way, we could see like this, you know, unique collaborations, Nintendo games, and a ton of indie games on Wii U. And that could actually be kind of a cool idea.
I think they just need a couple of those core titles, and they need a couple, like, put out a Nintendogs and get all the casuals going, well, this is great. I can pet
they
my
do
dog
have
on
a
my
brain
TV.
Age coming
Speaking
out,
of which,
fun.
Yeah, I can't believe that there's another Brain Age coming
even,
out. Like,
we
I
don't have it either. So, and it comes out
it's,
hypothetically.
It's, too, like, it's here.
In a week.
It's called something lame like Concentration Training. Uh-huh. But in Japan, it's called like Demon
Devil
Training.
Training.
Yeah.
Which one would you buy? Come on.
Actually, I saw the 3DS demo, and they have that dude, and he's like a Satan.
He's
now.
Like, okay, I'm gonna turn into a devil.
And
now.
He
I
was
saw a screenshot of that like years ago. I loved it. It was like Kawashima as a demon.
How'd you do, by the way?
I downloaded the demo, and it goes, "Today we're gonna do some math." And I'm like, "Shh." And it goes, "Well, so we're gonna ask you a question, and then you're gonna answer it, but it's not the answer that to that question.
It's
the question to the next question is actually the answer from the." And I was like. Fuck you. Yeah. How did you make math worse? I've never been so mad. I just closed my 3DS as hard as possible.
Did you guys?
You damn devil, leave me alone.
Did you guys ever get into the original Brain Training? Like when the hype hit?
I did until
I was
it
huge
stopped
into
recognizing
it.
My. And I was like, blue. Yeah. Brew.
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 Blue.
It never
blue.
When, it never
blue.
Understood when I was writing a five,
and I was like, nope,
so
you're
like,
an idiot.
You guys.
I was like, no.
I liked Big Brain Academy. That
yeah.
Good.
It's funny to think about that era and like how those were such mainstream things.
Yep.
And those sold the DS.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how weird is that? That a brain training game, and then everybody made brain training games.
I mean, there are grandmas all over the place with DSs and still brain training, probably.
Actually,
such a funny fact.
I don't know if I told the story. It completely blew my mind. I was home for over the Christmas break, and I was meeting some of my girlfriend's like extended family, and her aunt was like, pulled out an original DS.
No. Like, wow.
the big fat one. And she's just, and I'm like, what are you doing? She's like, just doing my daily brain training. And I'm like, still?
Wow.
And she's like, yep, doing it about 3 years now, 3 or 4 years.
That's
I'm like,
awesome.
Holy crap. Like, she logs in
after
every
that,
single
was
day.
She like, do you want to know the capitals of every country?
Well, here's the thing is like, especially when I've been in Japan the last couple of years, but also just around here every now and then, much more in Japan, you still see those DSs everywhere. Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. To me, it's like when you see somebody on the train with like a flip phone and you're like, oh,
that's so cute.
I had a flip phone until exactly a year ago.
So, I mean, what do you guys think about next gen? Like, I mean, Sony's about to, I mean, unless they are horribly teasing us.
I'm so weirded out about like this fall is going to be bizarre because there's so many good games still coming out for old systems.
Yeah, we just found out GTA got delayed
into
September.
Which could be next gen. We don't really know. We don't know if we can play our old games on those new systems.
Probably
we don't know if there's backwards
compatibility. That's the big thing that would bother me.
And
great,
the
I have
Wii U,
to leave my PS3 plugged in.
Yeah,
well, that's
Wii
the thing.
Have something huge too.
I came in this morning discussing this because, like, I run our features team, and I was like, "There's got to be a conversation we can have here." And I guess we can have part of it right here. But I was sort of saying, hijacking your show.
Woo.
I was sort of saying, like, this is the first time ever where we have these perfectly working, wonderful, still good consoles connected to my television right now, and I'm going to be like, nope, taking
$800 to get a new one.
I'm going to buy a PS4 and take out my PS3. And put it where?
This has been because
I'm not going to hook it up on my TV.
And
it's 35
pounds.
Thing, it's not like Wii U where like the Wii needed to come up to the HD generation and the
exactly.
tablets
like,
adding something
when the Wii U
new.
Came out, I was like, yes, because my Wii had been dead for a year. Like I wasn't playing anything
that was
on it.
Like here's like they've just now figured out how to make the very most of the PS3 or the Xbox.
Like when I did the Wii to Wii U system transfer and I had to turn on my Wii, I was like, oh man, this is like a ghetto over here.
Yeah.
This is old. It feels gross. Like I don't even want to touch this shit.
It's so crucial right now to have the 60 GB PS3, which plays PS2 games and PS1 games.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have that, then you have no... Like, that's what's so cool about that PS3 that they stopped doing. None of the PS3s now are backwards compatible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
so
if you
ugly.
Have that, you can play upscaled PS2 games and PS1 games.
Right.
So still, you can keep it for that.
I'm going to buy The Last of Us in May because it looks amazing and it's one of the best looking video games of all time. But I'm going to be sitting there the whole time going, man, what is this old crap I'm playing? I can't wait to
get a
new
system. I already feel that way. It's so funny. I got a new TV this week and I freaking love it. And I was like, what am I going to do? So I started watching like Lord of the Rings on Blu-ray. I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
And then it's like, I was like, what game is going to show off like something great? I'm like, all these games are like, they're working on better graphics right now. Like Far Cry, this is stupid now.
Yeah.
Because I just know there's something great like around the corner.
Yeah.
Like whatever they're doing now, it's like, I can see the textures there don't look that good.
It's just like nitpicking,
but there are games
though
that do look amazing right now.
I know.
Now,
and we're like nope, not good enough. Get them out the door, throw them in the trash. We need new consoles connected to our television.
I mean, that's the weird thing is like, I don't know. When 360 showed up and when PS3 showed up, from my recollection, like for the most part, I think we were kind of ready. We were like, okay. This time it feels like...
Oh, we were
like,
totally ready. The jump between Xbox and Xbox 360 was like...
And they cut it off prematurely, too. They cut it off after 4 years. But the weird thing to me is that, like, this time around, we're still getting quite good games. I mean, there's going to be a lull probably in June, and there's going to be in July probably. But, like, you know, we're getting, like, Splinter Cell in August. We're getting GTA in September.
Gears of War, Last of Us. Like, there are a bunch of AAA titles coming out
this
year.
And
this
is not counting all the crap that I still haven't fully played already. And... Then what am I supposed to do? Go switch
over to a
system.
What are you going to do if you buy GTA for your PS3 this September and it doesn't work on your PS4 this October?
I mean, I would not be surprised to see a bunch of games
downloadable
be
stuff
on both. I think they'll be on both.
Sure.
I just think that's going to be... But then that's going to be weird, right?
They have that for 360 a lot.
Sure.
I remember that.
I mean, like,
that was
why I didn't care about a lot of stuff. Like, or how excited are you going to be when you go buy your PS4 and you're like, oh, I can buy the same things on the system that I already own?
Exactly.
Yeah, for $800 less.
You know,
it'll be like the N64 expansion pack. There'll be like 12 more characters on screen.
And I'm sure the Sony Defense Force is going to show up right now and be like, well, what are you saying? Are you saying Wii U's better? And I'm like, no. I'm just saying specific to analyzing whether I care about a PS4 or a new Xbox, like, if more or less what I can get on it is just ports of what I can already get on the system I already own, and I can play all those other games that I like playing that I haven't played yet.
Rich, your entire last sentence was a whole argument against the Wii U's launch.
Exactly.
Some people this morning were just like naturally assuming that you'll be able to play PS3 games on your PS4. Why would you assume that?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Scott Lowe's staring at us.
I bet he has the room booked it, too.
Scott Lowe thinks things, and we say,
hi,
get
Scott
out. Hi. Yeah, we're almost done.
Okay, just
Well, let's do your tech fetish now. Sort of fetish. All right, so welcome to Tech Fetish. I'm Scott
Fresco,
Lowe.
Fresco. Fresco motorcycles.
Yay! Yeah, I don't know. All right, we'll be talking more about next-gen stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
I figure we covered it all right now.
Yeah.
I think we should do a podcast, like an MVC in like 3 weeks. Yeah, mocking Sony.
And just, let's not.
Like, let's
no.
not.
Well, actually, that's one quick thing. Their controller's supposed to have touch.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Rumor.
And a share button.
They got the idea from the Move, guys. It's,
Anyway.
Yep.
Cool.
All right. So thanks for listening to another Super MVC. You can write us at mvc@ign.com or follow us on our various
stories.
We really
need to do reader questions one of these days.
And we'll do reader questions
next time.
But we do need to get out of here now so I can eat pizza.
Okay.
Yeah. So thanks for coming in, guys, and talk to you soon.
Bye.
See
you. Bye. Bye.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my two wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I'm hoping to open up the conversation about balancing careers and family. The one thing I constantly hear successful people say, without fail, is that they wish they'd spent more time with their kids. That's time no one can get back. So I decided to create Business Dad, to engage in the conversation about how we're spending our time now, providing a forum for successful dads to share their joys and challenges of being a working parent. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier. And while this podcast will talk about business and will definitely be featuring dads, I think everyone can learn something from these incredible conversations as we unpack the expectations we all have about careers, relationships, and ourselves. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.